650, 1320 WILS. So one of the issues that's not being discussed, as we're all focused on Comey and President Trump, is the issue of trade. And we're about to face some potentially major changes in how we deal with other countries on trade. Jeff Ferry with us. He's a research director at the Coalition for Prosperous America. Jeff, great to have you on WILS.
Hi there, Mike. It's great to be here. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, what do you think of President Trump's team, the team he's got dealing with trade? Is this the right group of guys?
Yeah, I think he's got some excellent guys advising him. I mean, as you know, there is more than one point of view inside Donald Trump's White House, but we think there are some great trade advisors. In fact, there's three that are worth naming. Wilbur Ross is Secretary of Commerce. Peter Navarro is the White House advisor on trade. And now Bob Lighthizer has just joined the administration. He's just been approved by the Senate as the U.S. trade representative. These three guys have good views.
You've written about what's happening here. The Department of Commerce is holding hearings on the significant trade deficits we have. And you're right that the auto industry specifically has been affected, probably the most even. What's the impact been on our trade policies on the auto industry?
You know, the U.S. has run trade deficits for 41 years, and the impact of bad trade deficits and bad trade policy and bad trade agreements has been pretty severe. We've lost a number of jobs. I think the numbers are we've lost more than 300,000 jobs in the auto industry since the year 2000. Mm-hmm. And employment is down like 29% in that industry alone. That's automobiles and auto parts. And the reason for that, as you probably know, is that we have trade agreements which basically make it very easy for companies to build production outside the U.S. and China and Mexico are the two outstanding examples that come to mind. And then they import vehicles into the U.S. and without paying a lot of taxes, but it's not fair the other way around. We have to pay a lot of taxes.
And we keep hearing about labor costs. Well, just how much of an advantage do they have? How cheaply do they pay workers outside the U.S.?
Yeah, that's a very relevant issue. In Mexico, you know, I've been reading some investigations which say they're paying like $2, $2.10 an hour to employees in the car industry in Mexico, which is about 10% of what we pay car industry employees here in the U.S. And the really sad thing about this, I mean, we all know that folks in Mexico are paid a lot less than they are in the U.S., but the really sad thing is that the Mexican workers are told they have a union, but it's not what we think of as a union. They don't have a vote. They don't bargain for wages, and wages really haven't budged in the Mexican car industry for 2 or 3 years. So we've got a situation which is kind of a race to the bottom. You know, we're competing with countries where there's no free market economy in the way in which we understand that.
Chuck. In terms of the losses we face, these deficits, is it NAFTA primarily to blame?
No, you know, we have a $750 billion goods deficit as of last year, and half of that, pretty close to half, $350 billion, is due to China. So I would say China is the number one problem for our trading position. And then I would say you're probably talking about Mexico's number two. Germany's a big problem as well. And then there's a bunch of smaller countries, primarily in Asia, who also operate what we consider mercantilist policies. In other words, policies that favor their exports and try to keep our imports out.
And what do you want to see us doing in dealing with China on trade?
You know, I think we have to sit down with China and we have to say that we don't think their trade policies are fair. We don't want to run a deficit with them. And our goal is to get to a zero deficit with them from the current horrible level of $340 billion. And I think, you know, it's basically they've got two choices. One is they identify which industries they think they're going to buy a lot more American goods in, and they have to rev up the consumption level of their own people. There are a billion people, as you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, in theory, you could see that happening. But realistically, politically, I don't see the Communist Party of China going that way. So I think we need to take actions, whether it's on the currency front or the goods front, that makes it harder for them to import into this country. I'd like to see us making our own computers, making more of our own steel again.
You're talking about putting up tariffs, that kind of thing?
I think we need to look at that option. You know, I mean, we, you know, I speak for the Coalition for Prosperous America. We're a group including labor unions, manufacturing companies, and farm groups. Mm-hmm. And so we don't have a policy on tariffs except to consider those. We think you have to put everything on the table, as I said, currency, tariffs, other actions. You know, the first action, frankly, is there's a lot of existing trade laws on the books mm-hmm. that allow us to take action when folks are dumping stuff. In other words, if they're selling steel here in the U.S. at a lower price than they're selling in China, we have laws in place that allow us to penalize and exclude those products.
Is that what China's doing?
Yes, China is doing that. And China has built up a massive amount of overcapacity. I mean, it's just unbelievable the size of their manufacturing infrastructure, whether you're talking about plate glass or cement or chemicals or steel. They have overcapacity, and they then sell products around the world, sometimes directly, sometimes indirectly, through Korea, through Mexico. They end up in our markets at very low prices. Mm-hmm. And we think that there's enough evidence out there for the federal government to bring a countervailing duty or an anti-dumping case in numerous cases.
I mean, overcapacity, doesn't that hurt them also in some way?
Yeah, you know, you get into the internal politics of China. You know, people, you know, this is not Joseph Stalin's communist government where the dictator makes a decree and everybody follows because they're afraid they'll get sent to a Stalag. Mm-hmm. In China, there are something like 30 provincial governments who each have their own billion-dollar budgets and are building their own steel mills, believe it or not. And there's, you know, the central government has some influence, but it's not as well-coordinated and well-organized as some people think. So, mm-hmm. you know, they are, the central government does want to be number one in the world, and they do want to see themselves bigger than the United States in many industries. But there are some industries like steel where I don't think the central government has as much control as it wants. Mm-hmm. And so... so we're all paying the price.
And we've had these deficits going on for decades. So what do you really think anything is going to change now?
You know, there's an old saying in economics, when something can't go on forever, it has to stop. And I think we're getting to a turning point. I mean, frankly, you know, if you look at a key economic figure in my book is the household median income in the United States. That has not budged in 17 years. Today, in the last data is 2016. It's in exactly the same place as it was in 1999.
You're saying that's because of the trade deficits?
Yes, I believe that. The economies are complex. There are multiple causes, but mm-hmm. the trade deficit is a major cause of the hollowing out of our manufacturing industry. And as you know, manufacturing pays a lot more than service industries. Mm-hmm. And you have people, it's in the industrial Midwest, but everywhere in the country, who once worked in manufacturing, who once worked in well-paying jobs that were 40-hour-a-week jobs, that mm-hmm. today are working in low-wage, low-hour jobs.
You hear some of these technologists that say, look, we can never go back. Even if we try to equalize the deficit issue, we can't bring manufacturing back to the U.S. the way it was before. What do you say to that?
I think it won't be exactly the way it was before, but there are many industries where we can bring back a certain amount of manufacturing, and manufacturing brings with it other industries and other forms of prosperity. So I think that, you know, what you have to, you know, it's easy to say that, you know, where people like to say that we're moving to a world where everybody's going to be a software engineer, everybody's going to be a healthcare worker. I think that's a fatalist approach. That doesn't generate the economy we need.
I hate to bring this out in the last minute here, but the real issue, some say, is the robotics, that they're going to take these jobs anyway, that whatever jobs we're hoping to get back aren't going to come back. The robots are going to have them. What's your response?
It's not as simple as that. And I'd say this about robotics. The main companies building robots today are in Japan, Germany, and Sweden. Why is that? We should be building robots. And the way you build robots is you have machine tools, because robots are robots are machine tools plus software. We know how to build software in this country. We used to build a lot of machine tools. We don't anymore. So you see, it's all interrelated. You bring back some of the manufacturing industries, they evolve into the industries of the future. Sure, manufacturing will never be as big as it was in 1955, but we need to be a well-balanced economy. Today, we are heading into a service economy where you know, you've got, it's like a barbell. At the top end, you've got all those folks in Silicon Valley earning $150,000 a year, mm-hmm. and then you've got a massive number of people working at Walmart for $12 an hour.
Yeah.
We need need those middle class jobs back, and there are numerous industries that deliver them, and it's not an easy challenge,
right.
But we see a lot of steps, and as I say, today right. I was meeting with Democrats on the Hill as well as Republicans,
okay.
not just the Trump administration.
Well,
a lot of people see the problem.
I'm glad to hear they're talking about something other than Comey for the moment. Jeff Ferry, Research Director at the Coalition for a Prosperous America. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you. Yep. Great talking to you. Thanks for the time.
Take care. Talk again. And the 1320 WILS, we're back tomorrow at 6 p.m. Good night.